Lee. We call him the Ultimate Gene.
So most of us own at least one pair of jeans. And I'm sure most of us remember going shopping for that very first pair that we tried on, different styles, different fits. And it's become an essential piece of modern fashion clothing. Did you know that the word jeans itself comes from the name of the town of Genoa in Italy, where it was originally developed as a rugged fabric for workers to wear? In fact, it was a popular piece of clothing in northern Italy in 16th and 17th centuries. And there is an India connection as well. The original blue color was actually derived from indigo imported from India. It's only in the late 19th century that indigo color got replaced with manufactured chemicals. In 1950s, a series of Hollywood films depicted heroes wearing jeans.
Nobody tells me what to do.
This made them fashionable for people to wear everywhere.
I don't like cops.
Jeans found their way to India through British traders and soldiers in the late 1800s. In India also, they were popularized by film actors in Hindi films. Amitabh Bachchan in Sholay, or Parveen Babi, Zeenat Aman, Dharmendra, all of them wearing jeans. And that is how they became fashionable in India as well. Women wearing jeans remained a taboo for a long time, giving the wearing of jeans by women and also by men a sign of rebellion. Today, young people wear them as fashion statement. Successful CEOs wear them as a statement of how down to earth they are. And they have also become a dress code of a sort for all startup founders everywhere.
You're listening to Radio Azim Premji University.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent. This non-commercial program is for educational purposes only.
Jeans, just like other clothing, are stitched by thousands and thousands of workers working in different kinds of garment factories. The factories can belong to international brands, Indian brands, even unbranded attire that we buy. Karnataka accounts for actually roughly 20% of garment production in the country. And there are 760 such registered factories in Bangalore alone, and another 200 in the rest of the state of Karnataka.
Mera age 24 me Kolkata
me Andhra ninka vachinnamu 30 years
mera naam Sahina mera umar ko 40 hai hame Andhra se aaku idhar me hai
idhar hi
hai vaisu 46 maadi Andhra andru undaru mix Karnataka Tamil Nadu Andhra vallu anta mix hindi vallu full kada Marathi Assam word sanga hindi kada
One of my colleagues at the university found something surprising while studying these factories, and I have invited her to tell us more about it. Hi, Arima. Welcome to this episode.
Thanks, Richa. Hello, everyone. My name is Arima. I'm a faculty member in Azim Premji University. My research interests are around social determinants of health and health inequalities.
In fact, I was reading that according to some recent estimates, in Bangalore alone, there are almost 3 lakh people who work in such garment factories. And let me just put this in perspective. You know, this is roughly 20% of all IT workers in the city. So this is a very large number of workers that we are talking about. So Arima, tell us how you, as a medical anthropologist, got pulled into studying garment production.
Right. So this is an important question, Richa, because we got into this with a specific request. This request was from a senior official in the labor department. And what he had observed is a concerning trend among women working in factories in general, dying at a young age. Now, how did he find out this? It's basically that among all these organized workers, there is a provision of a small amount of 5,000, perhaps today it's revised, funeral expenses that are given to the workers' families if a worker dies. So when he was sanctioning these applications, he realized that the age of the workers who have died actually is quite young, as young as 28 to kind of 40. Then he was troubled by this. And then he actually made a specific request to our colleague Rajesh, who has been involved in kind of, you know, working on labor issues for a long time, to investigate. We looked at the data and we figured out that most of the deaths had happened to women who are working in the garment sector. We reached out to the family members of these workers who have died. These women were complaining of chronic weakness, chronic bodily pain, but everybody would say that, you know, whether the children actually would talk about the mother, saying that, but my mother was so brave, you know, she would just take a pill and she would be up and about the next day to go to the factory. You know, they thought these are all kind of heroic women who, you know, couldn't afford to bother about their health conditions. And this chronic weakness and chronic bodily pain did not really cause for any serious attention, because the pressures to earn something for the family were too high for everyone. So what we figured out is that despite our best efforts in spending time with these families, what these deaths revealed is more silence than any sort of explanations as such. Then we decided that actually we should turn our attention to the women who are currently working in the factories to understand what is it about their work conditions, work processes that is actually impacting their health vulnerability, and how would they talk about it.
So tell us a little about the people who work in these garment factories, who they are, where they come from, why they start working in garment factories. I read that most of them, maybe 80%, are migrants in the city. Is that also what you found?
Yes, we did. Most of them are migrants from North Karnataka, border areas of Tamil Nadu, but quite a majority of them actually are from Eastern India, you know, including Odisha, Bihar, and Jharkhand. There are many reasons why they actually get attracted to come to garment factories, or rather pushed to garment factories. One set of workers did share that they were actually earlier agricultural laborers, and they then moved to factory work.
फल्ली झाड़ हटाना वो तोड़ने का खोदने का वैसा
खेती में काम करते
हैं खेत में काम है
This is largely because, as they said, that agriculture is so rain dependent, right? So there is a lot of unpredictability in terms of the work that you get. Even if you have rain, you will not get the work throughout the year. The wages are so low, so and the expenses are so high. You know, with people children, they want to send their children to schools, etc. So they said that they actually had to leave agricultural work and come to factory work because at least it promised them some amount of regularity of work and regularity of wages, you know, salaries that they get. So that's one kind of set of workers that we are talking about. Another set of workers actually try to break away from, you know, quite oppressive caste and gender norms. And let me share with you, you know, in terms of what one of the workers actually put it, what she meant by this. She said is that if you work in garment factories, you get the freedom to be away from home, okay? And because you're also socializing with other workers, etc., your mind grows. And she said that you get to know about how to run a family, right? How to kind of, you know, bring up children, how to appreciate the importance of education. And actually, she also said in her language, how to control husbands. What she meant is that because her husband is an alcoholic, at least she gets the confidence to actually raise her voice. One common characteristic, whether they come from North Karnataka or from Odisha or Bihar or Jharkhand, supporting themselves is one of the biggest motivators. But also just to be able to experience the city life. Because many of them said that, you know, you can actually go to a cinema hall and watch a movie. And that's basically, you know, social mobility for them. another category of workers is that they actually come to the city via marriage. You know, so their husbands would be working here, but you know, many of them are actually carpenters or electrician or, you know, street vendors. And then they realize that the expenses of his city life are too much to be able to kind of afford. And then they get into this. But why are they able to get into garment work and not any other work? You know, one of the things that they say is that this is the work which does not demand any specialized skill. So you don't really have a job requirements that you need to have this, you need to have this degree, you need to know the language. And that's what basically is an easy entry for them. Some of them kind of, you know, particularly those who come from this Eastern India, there is this very established network where they're given some crass training in, you know, in tailoring. And then they are brought to the city. The age range is basically, you know, it'll be hardly as young as 20 to maximum early 40s. You know, so that's basically kinds of workers that we are talking about.
So it's interesting. So what you're saying is that some women get into this work after they are already here in Bangalore because of requirements for extra money. And some actually travel all the way to Bangalore with an intention to work here. So how does that come about?
Yeah. Let me share with you the journey of one woman, actually, in that sense. Here is a garment worker who actually belongs to a family of a Dalit Christian. And she's got four sisters and her parents. They don't have any land, no work. The parents hardly have anything. And both the sisters particularly, because the time that when we met them, two sisters were already married off. Actually, she had done her studies till 12th. And neither the family nor she could actually afford the college education, even if she wanted to. You know, they have got to make a living somehow. And she also had heard that many women from the neighboring villages actually had gone to Bangalore to work in the garment factories. So she and her sister actually enrolled for a crash training institute. You know, that's where basically many HR of these factories actually have contacts, and they did offer this training. And then both the sisters were brought with many others to Bangalore. They had started staying in a hostel because that's where they were put up. She shared quite a harrowing story to begin with. She said this is her first experience in the city, and she had started living in the hostel with six others in a very tiny room where they have got to keep their luggage, they have to do cooking, and they have got to sleep. And she started working as a helper in one of the garment factories. So she had not realized that the garment work can be so strenuous, right? And she just couldn't take it, and she fell sick. And she wanted to run away. And she actually tried to escape, at night once.
Really?
And, four security guards actually caught her and did not allow her to kind of escape. So she went back to the village. But it's the same cycle of poverty, and you're struggling to even have two meals a day. So after having spent in the village for about 4 months, she came back. And this time she brought her parents as well. So the parents, both the sisters with two more girls, they tried to rent an apartment and stay in, you know, one of the areas in closer to the factory that she's working in. You know, for her, she's 21, and she gets 8,500, you know, when we spoke in 2019. That means a lot for her, you know, both her sister, who is also earning that much. Yeah, it's a huge thing for a family, in any case, who don't own anything. And also, as interestingly as she was describing, that you can actually afford to, you know, do little things, because she wanted to buy a birthday gift for her nephew. You know, very proudly, she was showing us the picture of the nephew. And she said that she would go back to Odisha to celebrate the birthday because it falls somewhere around in the Christmas time. So she could buy such small things, you know, with that money.
मेरा एज 24 मैं कोलकाता में
कोलकाता से हूँ आप गारमेंट फैक्ट्री में कितने टाइम से काम कर रहे हो
एट मंथ
से काम कर रहे हो
सुपरवाइजर ज़्यादा टॉर्चर करता है नहीं अच्छा नहीं लगता
सुपरवाइजर अच्छा नहीं
है अच्छा है बट वो सुपरवाइजर अभी नहीं है नए वाला सुपरवाइजर है वो अच्छा है
नए वाला अच्छा नहीं
मेरा बेबी सीट में रहता है ना थोड़ा लेट हो जाएगा तो गुस्सा आता है मेरे ऊपर डांटे का हाँ
सुबह लेट हो जाए
I recall visiting a few small garment production units some 12 years ago. And in most of them, there was this large open room, roughly the size of an apartment, with big tables on the side. There were large number of sewing machines in the center. And I still remember, you know, the sound of all these machines going on at the same time. There was this loud fans which were trying to cool the room, even though because of all this activity in the room was quite hot actually. And you could smell the smell of this freshly cut fabric. But everybody was entirely focused on their work. There was no human sounds in that room. Right? There were scissors, there were sewing machines, there were fans, but no human sounds. How were the factories that you visited?
That's right, Richa. We visited around 4 factories to see ourselves in terms of how work looks like. You know, how factories look like, particularly these garment factories. Both, those who cater to international brands and also those who cater to domestic brands, the local market. And it's interesting is that, you know, when you see the workers, they are all marching together, you know, giggling, talking, socializing among themselves into these factories. There's a lot of noise among themselves. The moment they enter the factory setting, everything stops. Everybody is only kind of looking at the piece of work that they are doing. As you would see that, the entire work is organized around an assembly line and that everybody is doing some part of it. So it follows the life of a garment from the cutting to, you know, when the finished product, somebody is actually trying to paste that label and then ironing and then packing. And all of them are only looking down because even when we visited, barely anybody could afford to look at us and smile. So even if we tried our best to kind of, you know, have some even non-verbal kind of, you know, conversations in terms of acknowledging them, that's not possible because time is precious for them. As soon as they enter the factory in the morning, all of them are given a target for that particular day. And what happens is that because there is this pressure of finishing the targets and the pieces, because you have to finish it somehow or other during your work hours, they get about 30 minutes lunch break. The number of breaks that they can get, even going to the toilet, or even to drink water, is extremely limited.
So this kind of pressure must take a toll on their health, as you were saying.
It is.
కొంచెం బాడీ హీట్ ఎక్కువ అనిపిస్తుంది అంటే లైటింగ్స్ కింద ఎక్కువ సేపు ఉండాల్సి వస్తుంది కదా ఆ లైటింగ్ కళ్ళు ఎఫెక్ట్ అయిపోయి కొంచెం హీట్ అనిపిస్తుంది బాడీ
స్ట్రైన్ అయిపోతుంది
ఫుల్ రన్నింగ్ చేస్తాం కదా సాయంకాలం వచ్చేసరికి టైర్డ్ అయిపోతుంది
యూనో రిచా దే యూజ్ టూ ఎక్స్ప్రెషన్స్ వన్ దే స్పోక్ అబౌట్ హౌ దర్ ఇస్ హీట్ ఇన్ ద బాడీ రైట్ అండ్ సెకండ్ వన్ దే స్పోక్ అబౌట్ టార్చర్ So, for example, they're constantly working on the machines, but that's not the only thing. Constantly working on the machines, then you don't get enough space to eat, right? Because there's no time. You don't get enough time because you can't take the toilet breaks, so you don't want to drink much water. If you take too many breaks for your water, then the supervisor is going to kind of, you know, put pressure on you. Why are you wasting time and you better concentrate on the production. Then you are constantly sitting in one place and you're actually working on the machine. And that, they think, causes heat in the body. And that is why, you know, in their expressions, they say that, you know, there is hardly any blood in the body. And when they're talking about blood in the body, but they're also talking about low menstrual blood, you know, so because they said, you know, as many of them said, that nobody here gets regular periods. And another way that they talk about, which is a constant pressure on their body and mind, is this torture. You know, what they meant by torture is the verbal abuse that is meted out to them by the supervisors. You know, there are these line supervisors. In most cases, they are men. You know, it's interestingly how the workers who have moved from agriculture to factory work, they said that when we were doing agriculture, you know, despite the fact that you don't have regularity of work, etc., at least we were exposed to sunlight, you know, everything. So there is a good circulation of blood in the body, right? So they said that we never had any problems in terms of our menstrual kind of, you know, health. But here, this is a big problem.
So what happens after a few years of working like this, right, with this kind of pressures on the body and the mind? What do they do? Do they continue the work? Do they stop after some period?
So what, they have shared is that they continue till they think the body actually gives up. And many of them have switched to domestic work, they had no other way. Some have switched to what they call piece work. So that gives some flexibility from working from home. So they will take pieces and then that's how basically they will be paid. But many of them actually have left. So you would not see actually workers beyond their early 40s in any of these garment factories.
My name is Sahina. My age is 40. Where are
you from?
हमें आंध्रा से आपको इधर में है. मैं पहले फीजिंग डाल रहा था, आप लोडिंग करने भेजे. ये लोडिंग करने का एक साल दो साल हो गए.
अच्छा.
इधर में काम करना फिर को बाद में लग जाना आना. ये थोड़ा कमर पहुँच ज्यादा दर्द होएगा, शाम में तक ज्यादा दर्द होएगा. वो तो हमारे सुपरवाइजर अच्छा से खराब क्या भी नहीं, अच्छा अच्छा से बोलेगा, अच्छे से कराएगा. क्या कहते तो उसको भी टॉर्चर दिएगा ना पापो.
सो व्हाट इज इंटरेस्टिंग इज दैट नॉर्मली व्हेन वी टॉक अबाउट or think about garment workers, we usually talk about low pay and long hours, right? Even as we speak, there is this massive protest going on in Bangladesh where workers are demanding higher pay. But what you are pointing out are issues beyond the wages and the hours, right? Because that is there, but there is also the working conditions. And if I were to put it differently, what we are really talking about is occupational health, as the field is known. But even there, usually the emphasis is on safety, on toxins in the work environment. But here we are getting into something a bit more nuanced and a bit more everyday. So can you talk more about that?
You are right. On occupational health, usually our approach has always been towards hazards. But that's not enough because none of this apply to what these garment workers are talking about, the everyday conditions of work and how that actually impacts health. You know, another richer, when people talk about occupational health, usually they talk about different kinds of workers and the health conditions they have. But nobody talks about how does one explain about this particular occupation as to what is it about the work that leads to these kinds of health conditions. And I think this is what our kind of research and these garment workers that we spoke to were drawing our attention to.
Are there policies and programs that protect them or provide them with some support in case of need?
Yeah. For the garment workers, particularly two main components of their security is the provision for PF, that is Provident Fund, and also for the health needs, particularly this Employment State Insurance Scheme. It does provide, you know, sickness benefits, maternity benefits, outpatient care for, you know, the worker and their families, as well as meeting the needs for hospitalization expenses. For all of them, ESIS has really fulfilled, particularly for the married women, the delivery, the childbirth experiences. Most of them have delivered because this is also relates to they can get maternity benefits. Or for hospitalization. For a lot of other kinds of routine health complaints, they don't go to ESIS. Actually, ESIS, as they said that, and many other studies are coming up to show also that ESIS is still not geared up to cater to the occupational health needs of many of these female workers, you know. So it's all about still only child delivery.
This also leads us to another important point, Arima. Usually when we talk about women, especially those from disadvantaged backgrounds entering the workforce, we often think of it as an empowering act, right? So that's often the first time they're leaving their homes, they're interacting with people from different backgrounds, different geographies, they build relationships, exchange information, as you were also describing earlier. Or to put it differently, here we have an example of work that is empowering in some aspects, and the women themselves recognize it, as you pointed out, but it is also taking a toll on their physical and mental health. So how do we think about this?
You are right, Richa. So it is time that we should actually develop a much more nuanced understanding about not only work per se, but what is the nature of the work, the kinds of work conditions, and how that impact physical and mental well-being. Because ultimately, we should not just talk about any workforce, but we should be talking about healthy workforce, which necessarily includes respect and dignity at work.
So what you're describing is quite a complex situation, right? Even those of us who are aware of the kinds of working conditions of workers in these garment factories, it doesn't feel like there is much that one can do, right? So it's not about a particular brand that you can say protest this or protest against this brand or stop buying this brand. Because all kinds of brands, whether they are international ones, domestic ones, unbranded labels, all kinds of producers of garments follow the same kind of practices. In fact, you know, about a dozen years ago, I visited these production units that I was describing earlier. They belonged to a social enterprise, right? So even those with dual purpose enterprises, you know, who want to do good and also support their workers, they had similar working conditions. So how does one really, you know, think about this? Are labor unions thinking about these kinds of issues? How do we move forward?
Yeah, that's an important question, Richa, is that, you know, the labor unions play a very important role in kind of advocating for the rights of workers, in all workers, including women workers. But so far, the union, and quite legitimately so, have focused a lot of their kind of advocacy and time and energy in ensuring that the minimum wages is something that they are entitled to must get. The fact that they, you know, are different kinds of social security benefits that they have, the provisions are there that they must get. And on health, it's largely around that you have got ESI provisions and people should be aware of it. I think that the labor unions could go beyond that. And, you know, in for our research, actually, we had a conversation, you know, with the, we presented our findings to the labor unions as well. And they did acknowledge that, yes, they are kind of, you know, they have come across these kinds of expressions of torture, expressions of this. But what exactly does that lead to is something that, you know, they thought that it is important for them also to acknowledge. And perhaps we should hope that there is a greater conversation between people who work on labor, you know, including the labor unions, and people who actually work on health and women's health particularly. Because right now there is no real conversation because health technically comes under for these workers under the labor department, right? So I think that is something that we can move towards too.
See, the challenge in something like this is that we think of labor as work as a different category, and health as a different category, right? And to the extent that even occupational health as a area of work comes in, it focuses on safety, right? So the kinds of chemicals one interacts with, workplace accidents, it's not the broader definition of health that we are talking about, right?
Rather than, you know, looking at labor and health in a siloed way, it is time that, you know, all of us who work in these spaces of health and labor actually move towards a more holistic and comprehensive way of advocating for a more healthy and dignified workforce.
Thanks, Arima, for joining us and telling us more about what happens in these garment factories before the clothes come to us. We started today's discussion by talking about jeans, which have become an essential part of our modern wardrobes. And we discussed how your investigation of unusually high number of deaths among young women in garment factories led you to discover the working conditions in these factories, the restrictions put on women at work, the pressure to meet daily production targets, long working hours, insufficient breaks, and even the verbal abuse that you described, how all of these take a toll on their health. We discussed how our imagination of occupational health itself, and when I say our, the researchers, civil society organizations, labor unions, all of this imagination of occupational health needs to shift beyond accidents and toxins and include everyday working conditions, which can be equally hazardous to health. And how labor policies must explicitly consider not only safety, but also health concerns and human dignity. So the next time you put on your favorite pair of jeans, pants, or kurtas, think about the young women who come to cities like Bangalore to work in garment factories with hopes, aspirations, and big dreams. I'm Richa, and this is Story of Jeans.
I hope you enjoyed listening to that episode. My name is Narayan and I work in the art and culture function at the Azim Premji Foundation. There's a lot of good stuff happening on our channel across YouTube, Amazon, Spotify, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcast from. Get subscribing. Don't miss out on all the great action. Enjoy.
You're listening to Hindsunotha.
Rayo Kathasan.
Radio.
Azim Premji.
University.